There is a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination. It is an area which we call the Twilight Zone. You're about to meet a hypochondriac.
A man lies in bed as a doctor makes a house call.
Witness Mr. Walter Bettiger, age 44.
Taking his temperature.
Afraid of the following: death, disease, other people, germs, draft, and everything else. He has one interest in life, and that's Walter Bettiger. One preoccupation, the life and well-being of Walter Bettiger. One abiding concern about society, that if Walter Bettiger should die, how will it survive without him?
The doctor concludes the examination and collects his instruments.
Well, doctor, I ask you a question. How bad is it?
Oh, it isn't bad at all. As a matter of fact, it's quite good. You have no temperature, pressure normal, respiration normal, heart action normal, no infection, throat clear, nasal passages clear, ears clear.
What about the pains in my back and side? What about four sleepless nights in a row? What about that?
What about that? That, Mr. Bettiger, is psychosomatic.
You mean to tell me that I'm sick only in my mind?
That is my considered opinion. Mr. Bettiger, there's nothing wrong with you except these ailments you manufacture for yourself. Your pains are imaginary. Your inability to sleep is a case of nerves, nothing more. In short, Mr. Bettiger, you're a very healthy man.
You see, that's a doctor. 4 years pre-med, 4 years medical school, 2 years internship, 2 years residency. And what is he? I ask you, what is he? A quack!
Folding his arms, a woman enters the room.
Doctor, how is he?
Oh, don't ask him. The man's an idiot.
Now, Walter, don't excite yourself, please.
Well, then stop whispering. Now, there's half my trouble right there. This woman goes around whispering, making me think I'm sick, even when I'm not. And I am. Here I am on the threshold of death, and who is ushering me out? A quack and a whispering woman who doesn't know her mind.
I'll call tomorrow, Mr. Bettiger.
Oh, don't bother to do that. Just come right over with the death certificate. You can sign it right here.
Oh, Walter.
Oh, stop those crocodile tears. Oh, she'd love to see me gone. I can't tell.
Well, goodbye, Mr. Bettiger, and take good care of yourself.
Oh.
The doctor walks out. Ethel follows.
Doctor, how is he, really?
Mrs. Bettiger, your husband is one of the healthiest patients I have.
But he's sick most of the time.
Well, I'll call you tomorrow, Mrs. Bettiger. You know, it wouldn't be a bad idea if you took a few vitamins yourself. Oh. You look a little run down, a little pale.
Ethel, there's a draft in here, and I feel a coma coming on.
Yes, dear. I'll be right there.
All right, Mrs. Bettiger. I'll take a few of those. I'm sure you'll feel much better.
Handing her a prescription.
And, don't worry. See you.
Goodbye, Doctor.
Ethel returns into the bedroom.
Freezing air blasting into the room.
She goes to the window.
You know how many...
Pulls it down.
Germs are out a cubic foot of air, Ethel.
8,900,000.
I know you want me to die, but that's why you leave the windows open all over the place. But as a point of decency, couldn't you do it a little more subtly?
The doctor said it was stuffy in here. He said you needed some fresh air.
What's that? What have you got there? I'm well, but he gives you prescriptions for me. He says I'm not sick, but while I lie here helpless, he's out there telling you that I've got a life expectancy of 20 minutes. Now, don't deny it, Ethel. I could smell the collusion the minute he left this room.
It was for vitamins, Walter, for me.
Vitamins for you. Here I lie with my life ebbing away, and that quack prescribes vitamins for you. See, I'm dying, but she gets vitamins.
She pulls up the bed cover.
Oh, stop it, Ethel. Get out of here. Let me die in peace.
All right, Walter.
What?
I simply meant that I'd let you alone so you can take a little nap.
I can't nap.
Getting up.
Why does a man have to die? I ask you a question, Ethel. Why does a man have to die? The world goes on for millions of years, and how long is a man's life? This much. A drop, a microscopic fragment. Why can't a man live 500 years or 1,000? Why does he have to die almost the moment he's born?
I don't know, dear.
Oh, of course you wouldn't. Go on and get out of here, Ethel.
She leaves. He looks at himself in the mirror, sticks out his tongue.
Oh, it's a crime for a man to live such a short span of years.
Back into bed.
Why can't a man live a decent number of years? 200, 300.
Why not 500, 600?
Yes, or 1,000. Oh, what a miserable thing to contemplate.
A rotund man materializes.
A handful of years and then an eternity down under the ground in a casket in the cold, cold ground.
With worms yet?
Yes, of course, with worms.
I subscribe to your views wholly, Mr. Pettica. I mean, wholly.
Well, that's mighty decent of you.
Getting up.
Who are you?
Cadwallader's my name. At least it's the name I'm using this month. Has a nice feeling on the tongue.
Taking a seat.
Cadwallader.
Pettica gets out of bed, checks that the window is fully pulled down.
How'd you get in here?
I've never been gone. I've been here for some time. I'll make it brief, Mr. Pettica. You look like a man with a nose for a bargain, so I'd like to make you a proposition. We each have something the other wants, and that seems a relatively solid basis for a bargain.
Does it? Now, what do you have that could possibly interest me?
A great many things. Oh, you'd be surprised, Mr. Pettica. Many things. Varied and delightful.
And what do I have that could remotely interest you?
Actually, a minor item. In fact, something less than minor. Insignificant. Infinitesimal, microscopic, teensy-weensy.
What did you say your name was?
Oh, what's in a name, Mr. Pettica, really? It's a mere question of semantics. Just language. A mere stretch of words. For example...
Getting up.
What is it you want?
Walking across the room.
You want an extended lifespan. Few hundred years to play around with. Some people would call that immortality. But why make it sound so imposing? Let's call it just the two of us. Let's call it some additional free time. After all, what are a few hundred years or a few thousand?
Straightening a suit jacket.
5,000, 10,000, what is it in the scheme of things? The world will go on ad infinitum. So what are a few thousand years more or less, give or take, add or subtract?
And this little item that you want in return... What do we call that?
Well, what could we call that? We could call it a little piece of your makeup. A crumb off the crust of your structure. A fragment of an atom of your being. Or a...
Or a what?
A soul.
You're the devil. At your service.
Bowing, Pettica's face hardens.
How about it, Mr. Pettica?
Approaching him.
Why not? A partnership of a sort. You deed to me your so-called soul, and in exchange I give you immortality. And then indestructibility. Complete indestructibility. Nothing can hurt you.
Nothing can hurt me? And I live forever?
Certainly. Why not forever? Governments and institutions may disintegrate. People die. But Walter Pettica goes on and on.
Pettica licks his lips. Gets up. Goes over to the mirror and addresses himself.
Walter Pettica goes on and on.
Grinning broadly.
Mr. Cadwalder, about my soul. You say I won't miss it?
You'll never know it's gone.
No tricks. No hidden clauses. I'll just live as long as I want to live. Is that it?
That is it. That is precisely it.
What about my appearance?
Turning to the mirror.
I'm afraid I can't do much about that. What I mean is you should look practically the same.
Well, after 500 years, I don't want to look like a dried-up mole prune.
Ah, oh, Mr. Bedecker, you drive a mean bargain.
Getting up.
A most difficult bargain. But I'll show you I'm a cooperative chap.
Putting his arm around him.
I'll throw this into the deal. Whatever aging takes place on your features will be more or less imperceptible.
And, Mr. Cadwalder, I think we're close to making a deal.
Mr. Bedecker, you'll never regret this. Not to your dying day. Which, by right, should not be for several thousand years yet. However, there is one thing.
Taking papers from under his jacket.
Now it comes out. Good day, Mr. Cadwalder.
Oh, it's for your benefit, I assure you.
Flipping the pages.
Article 93, yes. Here it is.
Bedecker turns away.
Well, it's in the nature of an escape clause. Your escape clause. Whereas the party of the first part upon due notification, the party of the second part... Well, I'll just give it to you a thumbnail. It's simply that if you ever get tired of living, Mr. Bedecker, you can exercise this escape clause by calling upon me to furnish your...
Dropping the papers.
Well, there go those terms again. To furnish your demise, at which point I shall see to it that you are given a rapid and uncomplicated... departure.
Well, let me assure you, Mr. Cadwalder, that I'm not the sort of fellow who goes around killing the goose that lays the golden egg. When you talk of immortality to me, brother, I mean immortality. You're going to have a long, long, long wait.
Mr. Bedecker, nothing could please me more.
Then, Mr. Cadwalder, your pen, please.
A pen materializes. He signs the contract.
You sure keep it hot in here.
A rubber stamp materializes, smoke coming from it. Hands over the papers and drops them on the floor. Bedecker goes down to pick them up, sees the stamp of the devil's trident. Looks around, and the devil has disappeared.
Well, everything seems to be in order.
Holds up the contract and puts it in the pocket of his robe. Walks over to the steam radiator, which is steaming mightily. Licks his finger and touches the radiator. Now, places both hands straight down on the radiator and holds them in place. Lifts them up and... no worse for wear. Runs over to the nightstand. Picks up the tray of medicines. Tosses them out the window. Ethel returns.
Walter!
Ethel, behold the new Walter Bedecker!
Passes through the turnstile into a subway station. Turns to look at the approaching train. He dives onto the tracks. The other waiting passengers look on in horror. Apparently an express train does not stop. An officer arrives. Bedecker's body lies face down in the tracks. He raises his head, gets up. His jacket is dirtied and torn. He dusts himself off. Climbs back up to the platform.
You? How come you?
Take your hands off me and go get your claims adjusted.
He should be pulverized. He should be nothing left.
Back at home.
$1,000. Well, considering the fact that you're not even scratched, Mr. Bedecker, I think the company's being very fair. Well, just shut up and I'll sign it. I'll get my check tomorrow, I suppose. Oh, first thing in the morning. Just sign right here. All right.
Ethel shakes her head.
Thank you. Bye, ma'am.
He walks out. At the door, another man waits to enter.
Hi, Steve.
Oh, hello, Jack. You too, huh?
Yeah. Subway accident.
It's a bus here.
You, out. You, in. You've got my check, I suppose.
$1,500, Mr. Bedecker, if you'll just sign right here.
Now, do me the goodness to make a fast exit. I'll take your money, but you bore me.
Baedeker gets up and paces back and forth, still in his filthy, shredded suit.
Fourteen accidents. Wouldn't you think there'd be an element of thrill in 14 accidents?
I guess so, Walter.
Well, there isn't. It's dull. There isn't the remotest element of excitement in it.
To the window.
In short, I'm bored with it.
Walter, you should count your blessings.
Oh, Ethel. I swear he's cheated me. Immortality. What's the good of it? There isn't any kicks, any excitement.
Walter, do you feel all right?
At least when I was concerned about my health, there was some area of risk about it. I mean, there was...
He heads for the bathroom. Opens the medicine cabinet.
Iodine. Rubbing alcohol. Have we got any ammonia?
Ethel gets up.
Ammonia?
That's what I said, ammonia.
She goes over to the kitchen while Baedeker mixes up a cocktail in the bathroom. She looks in the cabinet under the sink, brings back a bottle. He adds the ammonia to his glass and bottoms up.
Walter!
He looks in the mirror, throws up his hands.
Nothing. I have just drunk enough to kill 12 men, and it tastes like lemonade to me. Weak lemonade.
Walter.
What?
What is this all about?
Would you really like to know?
Yes.
I am immortal. I'm indestructible. I have made a pact with a man named Cadwallader. He's given me immortality in exchange for my soul. More simply than that, I couldn't put it.
I'll call the doctor.
You will not call the doctor. If you had any imagination at all, you'd find some way for me to get some excitement out of all this. I've been in subway crashes, bus accidents, major fires. I've even drunk poison here. Nothing.
Hands on his hips.
You know what I think I'll do? I think I'll go up on the roof, and I'll jump down the light well. Straight, smack, dab, down the light well. 14 stories just for the excitement of it.
Walter,
please. She tries to block him, but he heads out.
Walter, please.
Leave me alone.
Walter!
On the roof, he goes over to the ledge.
Walter, please come back to the apartment. I'll make you potato pancakes. Remember, you always used to love potato pancakes.
Ethel, you are a potato pancake. You're as tasteless as a potato pancake. Now leave me alone.
Walter, don't.
Ethel, get out of my way.
No.
Out of my way.
Please, Walter.
Out of my way.
Walter, I'm...
Down she goes. All through the courtyard, lights turn on in the windows. Baedeker lights a cigarette. Looks down in the courtyard.
Wonder what it felt like.
Looks up. Smiles. Walks back to the stairs. In the apartment.
Hello, operator. Would you get me the police, please? Hurry, it's an emergency. Hello, police station. My name is Walter Baedeker. I live at 11 North 7th Street. That's right. Apartment 1214. Could you come over here right away, please? No. No trouble. I just killed my wife. Oh, I'll stay right here. Goodbye. Now, let's give the electric chair a little whirl.
In jail, a guard lets him out of his cell.
Well, Cooper the Legal Beagle, how are you?
I'm miserable, Mr. Baedeker. I've been miserable ever since I took your case. I've had tough clients before, but nobody like you.
Really? What disturbs you?
What disturbs me is that in 5 days of a trial, you've acted like a man desperate to get convicted. When I examine you, you shut up like a clam.
Is that a fact?
Grinning.
That is a fact. Now, tomorrow, here's what I want us to do.
Mr. Cooper, put it away.
How's that?
Put it away.
Pettigrew, did you get what I was just trying to tell you? You are about 12 hours away from a guilty verdict to a charge of first-degree murder.
And what is the penalty?
The penalty for first-degree murder in this state is death in the electric chair.
Mr. Cooper, the only thing they'll get for their pains if they try to burn me is a staggering bill for electricity. Goodbye, Mr. Cooper.
Pettigrew.
I don't know. I just don't understand you.
Mr. Cooper, please don't bother.
The guard readmits him into the jail cell. In the courtroom.
Mr. Pettigrew, you've been tried and found guilty of murder in the first degree. Have you anything to say before the court pronounces a sentence upon you?
No, Your Honor, I have nothing to say.
Then the court sentences you to imprisonment in the state penitentiary without hope of parole for the rest of your natural life.
I knew we could do it. Congratulations.
Pettigrew turns around and stares, life. Motionless.
Life imprisonment.
In his cell, a guard enters, carrying a food tray.
It's your last meal with us, Pettigrew. They'll be taking you to the penitentiary tomorrow morning.
The penitentiary. For life.
That's right, for life. Look at it philosophically, Pettigrew. What's life? 40 years? 45 years? You can do that standing on your head.
The guard goes out.
That's all. 40, 45 years? Maybe not even that much.
Pettigrew stands, grasping the bars of his cell. He returns to his cot, sits down.
40, 45 years.
After all, what's a few hundred years? Or a few thousand? Or 5,000? Or 10,000? What is it in the scheme of things?
He looks around, but sees no one.
No.
He faces down with his hands clasped behind his head. He looks up again.
Mr. Pettigrew.
In the cell, the devil materializes.
About that escape clause. You care to utilize it now?
Pettigrew nods his head.
That's a wise man. Odd thing. You look like a man having a heart attack. Just like a man having a heart attack.
He falls over and onto the floor. The devil disappears as the guard rushes over.
Pettigrew, that you? You all right?
He goes in, kneels beside him.
Hey, Bill, call a doc. Pettigrew just dropped dead.
Poor devil.
There's a saying, every man is put on earth condemned to die. Time and method of execution unknown. Perhaps this is as it should be. Case in point, Walter Pettigrew, lately deceased. A little man with such a yen to live. Beaten by the devil, by his own boredom, and by the scheme of things in this, the Twilight Zone.
Credits. Directed by Mitchell Lyson. Written and narrated by Rod Serling. Produced by Buck Houghton. Executive producer for Cayuga Productions, Rod Serling. Starring David Wayne, with Thomas Gomez and Virginia Christine. Raymond Bailey, Wendell Holmes, Dick Wilson, Joe Flynn, Nesdin Booth. Director of Photography, George T. Clemens. Production Manager, Ralph W. Nelson. Art Directors, George W. Davis, William Ferrari. Film Editor, Bill Mosher. Assistant Director, Edward DeMott. Set Decorators, Henry Grace, Rudy Butler. Casting, Mildred Goose. Sound, Frank Milton, Gene Valentino. Copyright 1959, Cayuga Productions, Inc. Filmed at Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios. Audio description by Lou Lasher.